Hey there, Rooster Teeth fans. Welcome to another episode of the Ruby After Show here on AfterBuzz TV. Tonight, we have a special treat for you. We are holding the Ruby Chibi Spectacular. We are going to be breaking down all of the deleted scenes from Volume 5. Guys, it's going to get wild. Stay tuned.
You're tuning into the destination for TV superfan discussion, AfterBuzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin.
Are we finally doing it?
Yes.
We finally get the chance to cut loose and talk about all of this delicious deleted material.
Yes. We've had all this wonderful ancillary canon that we just haven't discussed on this show.
It's been right there, and we haven't been able to talk about it until now, and now we're finally getting down to the nitty-gritty of it. Guys, I can't express how excited I am to finally be getting into the real meat and lore of this series, because we only ever really get the surface story. This is where all the world building is, so let's not waste any time. Hey there, Rooster Teeth fans! For this week's Rooster Teeth Reviews, we are going to be talking about Ruby Chibi and all of the secrets that all of these deleted scenes entailed. With me here tonight is my fantastic panel. To my left, Mark Donica.
You almost went full Duke Weselton with that. Like, for your delicious canon secret. Hi, I'm the Internet's Mark B. Donica. You can find me on Twitter at Mark B. Donica. We're going to get there. But one of the most amazing revelations of all of this complete 100% canon that we're talking about, we'll have to wait. Because I'd like to introduce the person to my left, Katie Cullen.
Hi, all my buddies. You can follow me all over the social medias at Kiaxet. That is K-I-A-X-E-T. And to my left, over there,
Megan Salinas. Hey, guys. You guys can tweet at me at the Menguin. That's T-H-E-M-E-N-G-U-I-N. Mark, I have to commend you on excellent planting and playoff later. Well done.
I do what I can.
Sadly, Stacey Shuttleworth could not be here with us tonight. She is under the weather, so please tweet her at Stacey Shuttles and send her your well wishes. There's been a terrible disease going around in Los Angeles.
It's called the common cold.
So please tweet her your well wishes.
It's less than 75 degrees. It's essentially a nuclear winter.
All of our immune systems just shut down, and we just can't function anymore. And be sure to also follow Patrick at P to the D's on Twitter and all that fun stuff. I was like, does he have an Instagram? I don't think he does.
I don't think he does.
But yeah, he's also a part of the team, and we miss him dearly. So guys, we do have some news that we want to get into right here at the top of the show.
But you don't have to hit the music cue.
No, that's not necessary. But while we're doing this show, we want to hear your guys' thoughts about Ruby Chibi, about these deleted scenes, and how the tantalizing revelations that we get, what your guys' favorites are, using the hashtag RWBYABTV or RoosterRTReviews. Either one of those hashtags will work. Mark and Katie have you both covered on the live chat. So, yes, we have some news before we really start delving into things. It was announced 2 days ago that a couple updates regarding some shows for you Camp Camp fans out there. The Blu-rays for Season 1 and Season 2 are coming soon. We didn't get a definitive date, but it's nice to know that they're going to be available on Blu-ray. I'm really excited, along with a lot of commentary tracks and behind the scenes. I'm jazzed.
I want those commentary tracks. Those are always the most fun of getting the DVD or Blu-ray of anything, is throwing on the commentary and listening to people either have really, really insightful discussions about the process or just go completely off the rails. Like, there's no in-between on commentary tracks.
Yeah, I've been hearing Michael talked a couple of times, has talked several times in Let's Plays about commentary tracks for Camp Camp, so I've just been waiting for the formal announcement, but apparently there was a period of time where they just talk about Taco Bell.
Are we surprised?
No, because he showed up with Taco Bell, they talk about the favorite item menu, but then he had to go to the bathroom for an extended period of time for no discernible reason.
Completely unrelated to the Taco Bell scenario.
Live
moss.
But not that much moss. But yeah, I mean, it's it's hard when, especially with these, and we're familiar with this quite a lot at this point, being Rooster Teeth fans, where it's free content, eventually free content, for the most part. But then they put out the DVD, and then you're like, oh, I can have all of this, like, already, for free, like, on my phone, on my this, on my that. But I'm getting that disc.
For me, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, for Red versus Blue specifically, it was always a joy to get the DVDs so that you could watch all the episodes as an extended movie.
Yes.
And there are certain seasons where that is a really effective way to watch it. For Camp Camp, it is more episodic, but still, it's nice to have them all there. And all of that behind-the-scenes stuff, I think, is well worth the price. Mm.
Sadly, for Red versus Blue, when you watch it as a movie, you miss the stuff they say over the end credits and some of the earlier stingers, seasons.
Yeah.
I only drink the blood of my enemies and the occasional strawberry yoo-hoo. It is a credits thing. So if you've only ever watched the movie versions, like, where did that quote come from?
I'm pretty sure they actually did animate that part for that season. Yeah, there were a couple instances where the ending bits were so good that they added machinimation for those bits.
This is true.
They can't all stay, which is unfortunate. Yeah. Some of them go on way too long. But anyway, kind of more on the bad news side of things, and it's not terrible news, it's just a little disappointing, is that Nomad of Nowhere, the show that we have all been super excited and super jazzed for, has been delayed until March 16th for first members. Mm. That's a little disappointing, but at the same time, you have to take a step back and go, guys, no, the reason that they're doing this is so that they can get it right. Mm-hmm. So that they can take as much care and refining as much as they possibly can before they give us the final, the finished product. So on the one hand, I'm disappointed, but at the same time, the little bits that we've gotten, I'm like, you know what? I can be patient. It's okay. I can wait a couple more weeks. It's fine.
Put that enthusiasm on the slow burn.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, and apparently the same thing did happen with Camp Camp. Which is one of the things they talk about on the commentary tracks and behind the scenes. So that'll be fine.
Well, we've heard a lot about the infamous pilot that got completely reworked into the pilot that we saw that finally aired. So, yeah, it's one of those things that goes around a lot, especially in the game development circles. Shigeru Miyamoto of Nintendo is famously quoted constantly now saying, a good delayed game... is better than a bad on-time game, or like a bad game lives forever, but a good game that's a little bit late.
Assassin's Creed Unity, I'm looking in your direction.
That one eyeballs. Assassin's Creed game where you could literally fall through the floor, like, yeah. That one.
Yeah, when they have to patch it to make it functional, that's disappointing. But as sort of a way to kind of bridge that delayed gap, we're going to get more Rooster Teeth animated shorts, which is, those are always fun. But even more fun is that we're getting Red versus Blue PSAs for first members starting tomorrow, every Thursday. So I'm excited.
Oh, yeah. It's been a while since we've had a full-on PSA from Red versus Blue. It's been at least two seasons, I want to say.
Definitely not last season. Did they do any from Chorus?
Well, they didn't do any for season 14 because that was an anthology, it was like season. Half PSAs.
They were all PSAs.
I don't actually remember if they did any during season 13.
Since season 13, Malachroma says.
Wow.
Oh, I trust them.
So it has been two seasons, technically.
Yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So it's been a while. What do you guys think, what important messages do the Blood Gulch crew need to impart onto the world?
I think we're going to get a gun control one.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
Yeah.
That's not
just
bad.
Yeah. One of those moments of, it's timely and tragic, but also timely.
I know they've already done one, but I feel like internet etiquette, like an updated internet etiquette.
I think they've also done a gun control one, too. But either way, it's just taking some of the classic stuff, sort of what season 15 was, which was just an update to the canon, catch everybody up, fill everybody in on all of these eras, and start fresh. I think these might be a refresh of the PSAs, and they didn't mention who's directing them, but if it's our good old buddy, then maybe we'll have some sort of a connecting through line. What if it's the Blues and Reds instead of the Reds and Blues doing the PSAs?
Ooh. Like Back from the Dead?
Well, not
no, I'd love it. I'd love a seance.
No. It, like, because we didn't get the PSAs from them. We That's true. Their versions of certain jokes in certain seasons. It's not going to happen. But what if it was the Blues and Reds and their versions of the bizarro PSAs?
We have awesome. A note from chat from Please Clap, whose name makes me happy every time.
Please Clap.
They showed a PSA at RTX Sydney. It starred Lopez, and it was great.
Maybe it's that one.
I'm in.
Oh, excellent.
I am immediately in.
Learning Italian with Lopez. Oh, no, that was the other one.
With the other guy.
I would love to hear Lopez teach Italian.
He's just so much fun.
He is. He's one of my favorites.
More fun than he has any right to be. And there's just something about, like, when Red versus Blue isn't on, I'm kind of like, yeah, I really enjoy the show, but I'm not like... But then when it comes back, it's like, oh, yeah, you're getting new Red versus Blue tomorrow. My dial goes from 0 to 11. It's like, there's a new Kingdom Hearts trailer. Really?
All of those emotions and the fandom enthusiasm just comes back in a giant tidal wave.
Yeah, the slow burn goes to full burn in a heartbeat.
All right. Well, I think that just about does it for the news. Before we get into the breakdown. Oh, go ahead.
Do we finally get to talk about it?
I wanted to tell our listeners really quickly about iTunes.
We have to wait! We've waited so long!
Slow your roll, Donica!
It is. My roll has stopped. My emergency roll break is on.
The it's sooner no I get rolling. Through no our iTunes, the sooner we can finally talk about it. So,
good.
Folks, thank you so much to everybody who's gone to iTunes to rate, subscribe, leave a comment. We love hearing from you, and it is the best way to let our producers know that you guys like the show that we're putting on and that you guys like it when we talk about Rooster Teeth-related content. And if you do leave a comment in the iTunes store, we will give you a shout-out on the show!
But not this week.
No!
Because the only one that we have is somebody who only watched one episode instead of the rest of them and gave us a really low rating. And didn't get the idea of the episode.
Oh, that's funny.
I don't like you. I'll just be honest. You don't get it.
You know what?
Listen to more.
They're living their truth right now.
I mean, but they didn't. But they weren't listening to our words.
No.
When you were in school, did you ever get from your teachers those things? It's like they're a long list of instructions that start with read all the instructions on the page before you do anything, and then it's all of the different steps are like draw a circle, draw a square inside the circle, do this, do that, do the other, stand up and yell, I'm first. And then the very last instruction is disregard everything, put your name on the paper and turn it in.
Yeah, so I've you done
could.
Those.
Yeah, I feel like this is the person who drew the circle, drew the square, stood up and yelled, "I'm first!" Did all of that.
Yeah, it was a comment about our last week's RT Docs episode, where the point of it was to give everybody one documentary to really deep dive on, and the rest of them we're just sort of casually promoting,
chit-chatting
about them, and this and that. They're like they didn't even watch all of them. So, yeah, they didn't get it. Anyway.
Somebody missed the point.
But that's none of my business.
By the way, just want to also give another shout-out to the creators of the documentary.
Yeah, we got two responses from the production team and the director of all of the RT Docs who checked out our episode. That's one of the things where we get those comments of people who don't get it to the people that we're shouting out and discussing and making sure that people are aware of their art. And that's Alpheus Media, who sent us on Twitter, so glad you're liking the RT Docs, props for the hashtag meme machine love in your rankings. And then, of course, that's another one that I can't wait to talk about later. But from Matt Hames, from the director of the majority of them, if not all of them.
I think there were one or two that he didn't direct, but for the most part, he directed most of them.
Hey, thanks for dedicating a show to discussing RT Docs. Appreciate the acknowledgement. Like hearing your reactions, and shout out to the Menguin and Stacey Shuttles for the meme machine love. Also, Mark B. Donica's personal connection to backyard wrestling. What up?
And here's the thing. They were all good and all touching.
Yeah, I've seen them all.
We were kind of making fun for a little bit. You know, we like to joke around on this panel, but all of them were they were fantastic stories, and they were told beautifully. So, well done. Well done, RT Docs team. You guys did a fantastic job.
I'm so sad I missed that episode. I wanted to talk about memes.
I'm sorry, Kate.
And everything else, but mostly memes.
There were a lot of fun memes to talk about. All right, Mark, go ahead.
Fight, win.
Go. You've been so excited.
The lights!
Is that how we make the lights go?
hold on, let me try it. Yeah, that's how you do it.
Oh my god!
It's exactly how you do it.
It's like the clapper, but better.
It's only that tone. It's like a dog. It's like a dog whistle.
It's like clap on, clap off.
Except it's the screamer.
Yeah.
So here's the thing. Is it's been a long... Ruby Chibi has been a gold mine of all of these answers. Like, there are all these forgotten storylines, all of these characters that we don't see very often, and some of these interactions that we don't get in the main thing. And speaking of DVDs and DVD extras, where have these been on every single Ruby?
I kind of feel like, you know how there are a lot of lost films in Hollywood history, mm-hmm. that, like, because film preservation wasn't a thing, and then one day somebody just stumbles across like a locker full of these long forgotten films. I kind of feel like this is the Ruby equivalent. Like, these are treasures that were hidden away and somebody just unearthed them.
I wonder if this isn't something where, you know how sometimes animated movies will break out, well, here's our sketchboards and here's our animatics and here's our this. I wonder if they didn't have these all along and just cleaned them up for our consumption a little.
Or I think it's something like, I forget the episode of classic Doctor Who where they lost the video and they only had the audio. So there might have been something where they had, sort of like with that the round of the tournament where it was Team Sun versus Juniper that they never animated.
Yeah.
This is just a bunch of the stuff that they went, well, we have, all of the actors have recorded. We have all of this material. How can we present it in a way that's fresh and new and different? And then that gets you a new audience.
A little avant-garde storytelling
and
as well.
And a different art style.
Yeah.
Yeah. Definitely a way for their animators to try something new. In the same way that, like, Camp Camp and a lot of their other 2D animated shows are all different in look and feel. They wanted to give the anime, or perfect example, Red versus Blue season 14. Like just having kind of going on at it at a number of different artistic angles, and they tried one and they decided to stick with it just to make it more distinct from Ruby proper. Now, I guess the main question is, if these are all scenes that were quote-unquote cut for time, but then transformed in another avenue, like, I guess the main question is whether or not deleted scenes are still considered canon. Because if you go to, if you watch a movie or a television show and there's a scene that ends up on the cutting room floor, you know, unless it's presented to you in some way, you have no way of knowing that it's canon.
I mean, they were deleted for a reason, even if sometimes that reason is just for time.
Mm-hmm. I feel like most of these were for time.
Yeah.
I think you're probably right.
Some of the seriousness of, like Nora, I always want more Nora. That's
of course,
clear.
Absolutely.
And this and all of these, all of this work, all of this material, is trying. It seems to me like it's trying to find the end, like the exact tip. How far can we go with Nora? And I think in the production of these, they found it and then readjusted and went down to the level that Nora lives at now on the main show. For
now,
some of these.
It's also possible that even though all of these scenes are canon and most were cut for time, that because the show has gotten so dark for the end of Volume 3, Volumes 4, Volume 5, that maybe these were set aside so that they would be less tonally dissonant.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's all still canon, but you have to remove them from the presentation because it's a different tone. It doesn't match tone-wise.
Well, and I wonder if some of this stuff wasn't also something they created when the story was going to go in a different direction. Because we get some of these deleted scenes contradict some of what we have for canon, and you can't really keep both. It's like If you've ever seen the documentary behind The Emperor's New Groove, the Disney movie, it was initially going to be Kingdom of the Sun, and it was going to be something completely different.
It was very Prince and the Pauper.
Exactly. They reworked the whole thing.
I want to say it's called The Sweatbox. No. I'm being serious.
I think you're right.
I think it's called The Sweatbox. It's a really good documentary.
Joking.
No. I'm being 100% serious. It's a lot of Disney animators going, this experience sucked. But
they even interviewed Sting.
Like Cam Griffin says, Yzma's cut song is amazing.
It's called Snuff Out the Light.
Y'all should look it up. The fact that we don't get it, but we still get the wonderful performance that we do get from Eartha Kitt. It's still a travesty. It's so good.
I have to go. I know we've been waiting for forever to do this, but I have to go and listen to this song.
But I mean, and in the original Aladdin, Jafar had three different songs that they were trying to work as a villain song, and they cut all of them, and then we got the reprise that we got. So something similar to that, I wonder if a lot of what we have here wasn't created in the process of workshopping the show. Like, we're going to go in this direction, and it was only at a later date that they went, oh, we changed the story, so this can't stay.
So I guess what we need to do now, we can't go through every one of these in great detail, but we do want to definitely, for season three, the episodes that have been released for this third season, we can dig into those a little bit more in detail. But broad stroke-wise, let's talk about seasons one and two. Mm-hmm. Guys, what was your main takeaway from season one?
Man. I like.
There's so much.
Can I go ahead and get the ball rolling?
Go ahead.
I mean, you're the lead. Please do.
For me, I completely understand. Again, talking tonally wise, why this was cut, but I really feel like revealing that Pyrrha survived the events of Volume 3.
Well, then let's clear something up.
Yes.
Is this parallel? Where does the line of Chibi this end? Are they trying to keep it in? Are they trying to keep it in everybody in their attires from a lighter time? Or is this the stuff that happened in between season two and three? Is this the stuff that happened in between?
Not to get all film theory on it, but maybe what this actually is is Nora breaking from reality?
Because we do have that.
Yeah.
This is Nora coping.
Yeah. It's because there are a few things that are shown within both seasons one and two, mm-hmm. for Nora specifically, that I wanted to talk to you guys about.
Please.
Because not only does she have this sense of denial that anything bad could ever happen to Pyrrha, she's full denial mode to the point where she goes, nothing bad ever happened, ever. And it's almost like she's addressing the viewer directly. Then later in season one, she has one too many cups of coffee. And it's like she gets a peek behind the veil. And then in season two...
It's a good pun. Peek behind the veil.
Hey!
Oh, I hate myself.
She meant that... That's actually written here. I've got it in the show notes. She wrote it. Yeah.
But she gets a glimpse of the Rooster Teeth store as it is. Mm. Now, here's the thing. Is Nora and her steadily decreasing mental state and her clinginess to Ren, is this a result of her losing her mind and it's just a slow rate of deterioration? Or is it that she actually has gotten a peek outside of her reality into our own in kind of a never-ending story sort of way?
Well, it's not the first time that Rooster Teeth has had something of a fourth-walling character. They've made mention that Caboose is aware of the fact that they're all kind of fictional and they're all kind of in a video game, and that's why he is unmoored from reality and treats everyone around him like stubborn cats. So I wouldn't be surprised if they did that again with Nora. She seems like the type of Pinkie Pie Deadpool character that you could do that with a little bit and kind of get away with it.
You're stewing a little bit, Mark.
Yeah, I'm stewing
deep
a bit.
Thoughts.
But somebody in chat, and unfortunately it did pass by, somebody said, like, as we were talking about the different leveling of Nora and seeing how far going with her character can go, what if they go as far as to putting Nora in an RVB PSA.
Oh.
Like, as the limit of testing the cross reality, because we know that there's something that happens in every Rooster Teeth show is there is that crossing over of its media somewhere. The X-Ray and Vav comic in Tuxin's book trade, and even the
Achievement Hunter poster on the wall.
They're like the Chivo guys or something. Yeah, something, but not quite.
And as we'll get into when we talk about season three, certain potential actual establishments.
No. It's earlier.
Oh.
Because Ruby is reading a Camp comic and goes, ah, crazy kids.
So does but, Camp exist as a form of entertainment in the world of Ruby?
I'm still going.
It's all connected.
Sorry.
Still going.
Go ahead. The fact
that we have a printed account of Camp to the point where in season three now we have Jean singing the theme song. Now, what we know is the theme song. However, Jean also is kind of similar to Disney Princess David. and I'm wondering if Ruby isn't reading a Camp comic, but is reading a magazine article about Camp Campbell, of which Jean has visited. So as a result, Camp and Ruby do exist in the same universe.
So what would Jean's camp have been then? Would it have been like self-defense camp or camp?
I think it would probably, sorry for a little bit of a spoiler if you don't watch a lot of Camp, but it probably would have been a similar thing to what Max is there to do.
Oh!
and then Jean forms a really good relationship with the counselor there.
I don't know what it is, David. You just get me.
What? Now this is going further. What if Camp is a Jean Arc production? A semi-biographical Jean Arc production where he writes himself as the sorry, Paula Chroma just got me in chat. It's 50 Shades of Uncalled For. Writing himself as the badass kid character that he always wanted to be on the outside with the true feelings on the inside.
That's
an entirely different conversation, a 100% serious and accurate and canon conversation for another day. Well, yes, that's just something I wanted to bring up.
Miraculous Corazon in chat says, Jean did say that he and his sisters used to go camping all the time.
Now,
maybe he's writing his sisters into the other campers.
I'm wondering also if this is a possibility. He went to Camp Campbell. They were flower scouts.
Oh.
Wait, didn't he say that he had a pretty good relationship with his sisters?
Yeah.
He did, but as we also say, he had to purposely be annoying as a mechanism to survive.
That's true. But even if you have a good relationship with your siblings, sometimes you really just have to lean on the song that gets on everybody's nerves. Mm. You
That's
know?
Very true. Or maybe even if he does have a good relationship with them, he's always secretly been jealous of them, so he unconsciously wrote them as sort of villainous characters.
Now again, we have limited time.
We do. As much as I want to
talk about Camp all damn day, let's try to stay in the Ruby deleted scenes, 100% canon deleted scenes.
There's another thing from season one that I definitely want to talk about, and that's the moment where there's sort of a very Shakespearean play within a play, and much like the World of Remnant fairy tale that we got, you know, very much added to the world, to the lore and the world building, I feel like this production of Little Red Riding Hood really gives us some good insight. However, I also understand the perspective of maybe this being a little bit too on the nose. You know how we've never really gone full fairy tale with any of the given characters like Little Red Riding Hood and Goldilocks. It's always been little references. Do you guys think this play added to the world building, or do you guys feel like it was too on the nose and too blatant?
I think it might have been a little too on the nose, and I think that might have been why they cut it. Like, the fandom is pretty smart. We don't really need the show going, symbolism! For us to get
That's fair. Yeah, it's... Ruby fans are smart. They can put things together pretty well.
Oh, yeah.
Or at least I hope they can. Shout out to our audio listeners who can't see this.
See the eyebrows waggling.
But you should subscribe to AfterBuzz Animation on YouTube.
Absolutely.
How about you, Mark?
A little bit of ASMR there.
What do you think? Do you think this play was too blatant?
A little bit. I think it was a little bit on the snout, if you will. But I think my favorite thing about it is the characterization of Oz that we get for this is where he's a willing participant, but he plays along until he can make a power move. Oz, that a characterization that we're getting a little bit in season 5, where it's, oh, sure. Yeah, I'll help. I'll be, yeah.
Yeah.
But you're going to be in trouble later.
Season 2 in particular, a little bit in season 1, but season 2 in particular seems to be a lot more open about showing Oz as a very flawed character, which is something we're really only getting now in Ruby, about how fallible he is and how... You know, he once said he made a little more mistakes than any man ever alive, and now we're kind of getting to see what kind of mistakes he made. And so it's great that season 2 of Chibi is kind of leaning into that a little bit.
Well, and again, I'm wondering if some of these weren't written while they were still workshopping the story, because this is a side of Ozpin that we don't see as often. In actual Ruby, in the scenes that have not been cut.
Improper volumes.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I'm losing words tonight. So I'm wondering if it wasn't cut for that reason. Like, we're going to go this direction with Ozpin. Actually, no, we're going to go over here. All of this stuff needs to go.
Right.
Yeah, this just seems that a lot of this stuff is, well, this character didn't get a chance to interact with this other character. Let's give them this interaction and
flesh out their relationship.
Yeah.
So... Okay, we need to move on to season 2. Do you guys have any final thoughts on season 1?
The one thing for season 1 that really threw me, and I'm honestly trying to figure out if this was going to be in the initial season 1, or if Rooster Teeth is just making us go crazy with conspiracy theories, because they've been known to do that, is that moment where they treat the whole thing like it's been a sitcom the whole time. Like...
See,
that is a weird bit of fourth walling.
I think that was to throw everybody off.
I think you're
right. About the real underlying purpose of this series.
I also kind of looked at it, maybe this is just my interpretation, but I looked at that as the episode of Scrubs where they created a laugh track. Like, it was an homage to that particular episode. Mm-hmm. Maybe, I don't know, maybe I'm going off the deep end with that one.
That's possible.
Well, really, really quickly, while we're transitioning, Kane's Child in chat says, what about the Chibi episode where the girls are calling Ozpin out on being oblivious while Cinder and friends are actively sabotaging the Chibi logo? I think that's
the beginning of season 2.
Yeah, but I think that's what you're referring to with the avant-garde nature and letting the animators and the writers really get to express themselves mm-hmm. with the story material. Hey, you've got 30 seconds to get this point across. Well, here's how we're going to do it.
The only other thing I want to bring about season 1 is that I really wish we could have seen more of Torchwick's side gigs and his little schemes, his like phony business ventures, like Torchwick's energy drink and then the phony law firm he and Neo established. So those were all fantastic, and I wish we could have gotten more of that in Ruby proper.
But it's one of those things where this avenue allows us to see these relationships and like we're introduced to Torchwick, and he doesn't feel like this throwaway criminal mastermind. Yeah. So he's just like, oh, they present him as this guy, but how did he get his start? Where did this guy come from? How did he make his rise? And we got a chance to see that in the series.
It's also fun seeing just how many wheels he had spinning at the time of his demise.
Well,
God, I miss him.
Yeah, everyone does. What I'm wondering about for these, because on one hand, you look at these deleted scenes and you get to see so much more about all these characters that we know and love and that maybe we're not seeing much of anymore. Mm-hmm. We haven't seen Neo in a while, but we've gotten so much development for her in these cut scenes. And so What the difficult thing to parse for these is how much of it was actual intended development and how much of it do we have to leave out of our understanding of the characters as they are right now? Like, how much of what we're seeing here no longer applies? And that's a hard line to walk.
Yeah, I think the Mercury scene from this most recent released episode,
which we can't talk about yet because it's a sponsor,
it's still technically
only
a first thing, but I think the only
canon,
the only 100%, the only thing that kept, I think the only thing that kept that from being in the show was the fact that Torchwick is in that scene. I think that's the only thing keeping that from being in the show. It is one of the closest things to actual character, and even then, Mercury sounds just like Neil.
Ugh, that was a delight.
So that's one of those things where is that Jean pulling from some? All right, I'm off camp. I'm sorry.
It's okay.
It's not okay. Here anymore.
Sorry. We're never off camp.
All right, let's move on over into season two. We're gonna have to speed through season two. If we're gonna talk at all about the season three episodes, I feel like the main thing from season two to take away that we haven't kind of already touched about is that we get more scenes of Ty and Crow and what their relationship is like raising two girls. Mm-hmm. And what I found very interesting, and this isn't something that I necessarily would have inferred just from watching the regular volumes, is how much of a rivalry they actually have, how much they actually care about one-upping each other or looking cool.
You know, it doesn't really surprise me given their respective personalities. I feel like Crow instigates most of it just by being there and being himself.
See, it makes me question even more what happened with Team Stark. Like, what scenes of Team there are still so many questions about how that team fell apart.
I
think this is the avenue to, you know? This is a place where deleted concepts, developing concepts, developing characters get a chance to flourish and live and show. Like, what if, since we're already in the beginning of season three, but what if season four is the flashback season where we finally get to see some of that stuff flesh out? Now, because we've been getting a lot less, if at all, we haven't been getting any, what do they call it? What was the history?
World of Remnants.
World of Remnants.
Yes.
We weren't getting a lot of World of Remnants, and then all of a sudden this series pops up?
Yeah.
I feel like
that's not a coincidence.
A little too convenient.
maybe that's something that we can look forward to more here in season three. The other thing I wanted to talk about, and it's a through line throughout all of season two, is the Battle of the Bands and the sort of climax that we get with that. I didn't realize any one of our characters besides Weiss was musically inclined. Even Torchwick and the rest of the villains really seem to have an affinity for music.
And I'm amazed that this is the most non-hostile interaction with our villains that I think we've had in normal Ruby or in the deleted scenes.
And not only that, and it's going back to season one a little bit, unless I'm mixing up my seasons, but learning that the Grimm can speak, that changes everything.
Well, not even but they canonized the Shadow People.
Yeah.
And how the Shadow People, what the Shadow People are. And the fact that they acknowledge that and they're not, they're actual beings. They might be clones. This might be a Kingdom Hearts-esque nobody situation, shadow situation, where the strongest people have shadow versions of themselves.
You know what's...
What if this is what happens to people who get killed by Grimm?
Or guys, what's a little bit more unsettling to think about is that the Shadow People existed in the world of Ruby for the first couple volumes. We get this, and we finally get acknowledged that, yes, those are weird-looking people. It's weird that they're silhouette-shaped and that some of them are kind of look like us. And then in volumes 4 and 5, and I think 3 as well, the Shadow People don't exist anymore. What happened to them?
Oh, we found them an island like Menagerie, and they just shuttle them all off there.
And it's another cover-up!
Oh, my God. Dude! That's upsetting.
That's pretty upsetting.
The world of...
I mean, I covered my mouth at the microphone.
You know...
That's pretty upsetting.
I bet Atlas is behind this. Because they're getting ready to put up their walls and have a total lockdown. Of course they would cart off a group of people that doesn't conform to their ideals off to another
island.
But
are they getting rid of them? Or are they supplying them with weaponry? And joining the army?
Are the shadow people inherently dangerous, or were they just purported to be dangerous in order for this mass deportation to occur?
See, this is what happens when you don't watch Ruby Chibi. You miss this huge, all this canon stuff. We should have talked about this in our preview of season 6 episode.
We definitely should have. I'm kicking myself.
See, Kane's child, the shadows got shipped to the dragon continent.
That's what I was just about to point out.
And They're being added to Salem's army.
They're being fed to the Grimm as they spawn.
Oh my god.
Baby animals are hungry.
That's monstrous.
I don't like that.
Monstrous.
I will say, going back to the Battle of the Bands thing, I do think that this world is so focused on art and color and stuff, so I think it might be one of those things that we're learning about the world where it's just a part of life where somebody knows how to play an instrument. Or how to sing, or something like that. It may just be a part of the world that they're starting to hint at that we haven't gotten a World of Remnant at, and because we didn't get a World of Remnant about it, we got an entire season of Ruby Chibi about it.
Kane's Child in chat says it ties into the theme of the priority of creativity on Remnant after the Great War.
I love that. That's fantastic. Well said, both of you.
Yes.
Yes.
Thank you, chat.
We already talked about Nora. I guess we can talk about the fact that the world of Remnant seems to have very similar holidays to our own world. Halloween is something that exists in this world.
And it's Ruby's birthday.
Yeah.
Which was so sweet.
Miles confirmed that is canon. Which is part of the reason why we're talking about this whole stuff because there is canon in this.
They say, if that's canon, what else in here was taken as canon?
Welcome to the show.
Yep. Everything Ruby is Busters. The answer. Everything is the answer.
Well, hold on. Really? Sorry. Before we get so far away from the Shadow People, Wilfred Cartano or the Shadow People were just rats jumping off the ship before Beacon fell.
They knew
that something bad was going to happen, so they were like, yo, we're going to that dragon continent.
And they didn't warn anyone.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my gosh.
So they are inherently evil.
This completely changes my entire view of the first couple seasons.
We're changing the show to Conspiracy Watch, like Rooster Teeth Conspiracies.
We're gonna have to redo this graphic.
I'll have it done by tonight.
Just post it on there below 57.
No, we
Red versus
Blue 13. Need 6 pieces of paper. We'll just slap it on the TVs at the time. Now it's conspiracy time.
Someone get the yarn.
I'm starting to feel like with the cross-media Easter eggs, I'm starting to feel like a little bit like it's a J.J. Abrams production in that, like, I'm looking for...
Toggerotto's in charge of everything.
At one point, the junior detectives were talking, heard something on the radio, and they referred to it as a 479er. Like, that's a deep Red versus Blue cut.
I'm telling you, they're going to start putting slusho in everything. Like, call it Dusto or something. Ugh. Everyone's going to be drinking it.
Or we'll start getting the... I mean, well, isn't it weird how this is going into conspiracy thing, but I just find it weird. Isn't it weird how every major animated Rooster Teeth show has had some sort of a gag with a coffee cup?
Yeah, a little bit.
Because we've got Oz with his, we've got Max with his nope, and then we've got from the base back at RVB with God, there's 15 seasons. You'd think I'd remember something.
Was it the director's cup? Is that what I'm?
Well, the director's cup. But then there was also a thing where they were trying to sneak, and the cup falls over, and then nothing happened. Anyway,
there's a lot. There's a lot we can dig into. Okay,
hold on, Steve, really quickly while you're paying attention. Thank you. And a special welcome to all of our late viewers that don't get that callback.
I guess the only other thing I want to bring up is that for a brief moment, they allowed in the nondescript holiday episode that they did, they allowed Torchwick a very brief moment of humanity. I was wondering if they were potentially setting him up for a redemption arc that ended up ultimately getting scrapped.
I wonder if this wasn't their initial idea for how he was going to die.
Be a heart attack.
Yeah.
I've experienced joy for the first time and goodwill.
And I couldn't survive it.
Physical heart enlargement. Yep. That my now smoldering carcass couldn't handle.
Look, magic exists on this show. So.
All right, let's dive more into season three for the very short amount of time that we have left.
Really quick.
Why is it that in these extra bits, we still get things that end up on the cutting room floor? I wanted to see that bank robbery.
Well, we see it piece by piece by piece.
Is that the through line for this season?
I think this might have been, this might be a what if sort of thing if the girls didn't break up. If they stayed together, what they could truly be capable of, and it's crime.
Wait, multiverse? Like, there's another, like a turn left scenario where they chose to stay together instead of go their separate ways, and this is just a universe where that happened.
I think you're right, because it seems to also include arson. And we saw Yang break up a club in the Yellow trailer, and this just seems to be the much more extreme version of it.
I just realized that episode that we talked about earlier with Nora, and the cup of coffee, she saw through multiple dimensions, all of which presented a different scenario. Every episode of Ruby Chibi could be a different universe.
Cam Griffin and Chet says Ruby Chibi is Earth 2 Ruby.
So we're in some Cloverfield paradox territory.
A little bit. Spoilers.
Available now on Netflix.
Spoilers. Come
on,
Katie.
For like 3 weeks.
But yeah. Every single one of these episodes could be a different universe.
So, somebody, PepsiFan24 says, damn it, Barry Allen. What? Well, no, but Ruby's semblance is speed. What if every time she activates it, she changes the entire landscape of the world, a la the Speed Force, and arrives in a different area?
It's Ruby Point.
Which is why
Crisis on Infinite Remnants.
Which is why style is so different, because this is just a universe so far removed from the one that we're accustomed to that this is just how everyone looks. This was like just a different evolutionary path. Oh my gosh, guys!
You're right.
We just crack this?
I think we did.
I think we did. So I think now's the time.
Do we have any final thoughts on what we have for this season so far?
The revelations tonight have been insane and will change the course of fandom discourse forever.
Five ever.
I ship Cinder and Ty now.
I'm also happy that we have Cardin back.
Yes.
Because I asked Adam, are we ever going to see Cardin again? He said, no. But... here we are, and we've got Cardin Winchester back.
All right.
And I guess his name is Karen in this Earth 2 version.
All right, guys. If that's our final thoughts, then I suppose now's the time to say, hey, we've had a lot of fun here tonight. We've had a lot of fun getting to talk about Ruby Chibi, but there's something we want to talk to you guys about tonight, and that's commitment to the bit. At this very moment, all across Los Angeles, there are thousands of comedians doing thousands of bits that they are all committed to who don't have audience members. So, please, if you have a loved one who's doing a bit, support them and laugh at that bit.
Please laugh at that bit. Please laugh at this bit.
Please laugh. Please clap.
Please clap.
And if they ask you for feedback, constructive criticism. Nurture that bit. Love it.
Nurture their love of comedy.
So yeah, last week we were like, oh, we've got a week to fill. Let's talk about Chibi. No. Let's not just talk about Chibi.
Let's talk about Chibi.
Now the coolest thing is we started talking about this on Sunday, and my favorite response that we got is from Ruby Chibi writer Tom Alvarado. Who, in response to all of this, just left a pensive emoji.
Real talk, though, there was a Ruby AMA a couple weeks ago, and we do want to talk to you guys about that, but sadly, we are out of time this evening. Let us know if you guys want to hear us discuss the AMA in a later RT Reviews episode. In the meantime, thank you guys for going on that journey with us, for saying yes and with us. Katie, where can people go if they want to find you?
People really were yes anding like crazy in the chat. Like, you guys... Congratulations.
And to the people who are late, thanks for sticking around.
For the people who didn't quite get the screamer joke, we're here for you and we love you. I'm Katie Cullen. You can follow me all over the social medias as well as on Twitch and YouTube at Kiaxet. That is K-I-A-X-E-T. If you want reactions to these chibi episodes, the YouTube channel is where they live. Star Wars Rebels series finale is on Monday, as is the Voltron season opener. And of course, we'll be back here next week, same Ruby time, same Ruby channel.
And actually, because of the delay of Nomad of Nowhere, we have a couple more weeks to fill.
Yep. We'll just be up here, like, tap dancing.
But there's something coming, and you better be ready for it.
But until then, you can follow me on Twitter, at Mark B. Donahue. You can follow Stacey, at Stacey Shuttles. We do a show, and Patrick, and Peter the D's, we do a game talk show called Inventory Full PT. You can find us on Twitch, at Inventory Full PT. I'm going to be streaming some fighting games over the weekend. I picked up some new releases, and that's going to be fun. Oh, that's funny. You forgot to stick my finger in my nose at the end of the PSA.
My apologies.
That's okay. I think that's still behind first wall. Either way, thank you everybody for watching this episode and supporting us. Please join our group on the Rooster Teeth site. We're going to be using the journals a little bit more to update. And please share all of our previous episodes. And if you missed our ones from the past couple of weeks that are sort of the random ones, we've got the manga review, season 6 review or preview, as well as our RT docs that we did last week. We took a mini dive into those, but please check out all of those episodes and follow us on Twitter at ABTV Rooster Team. RTX is coming, and boy, do we have nothing planned.
That's a joke. It's just a joke.
I'm Megan Salinas. You guys can tweet at me at The Menguin. That's T-H-E-M-E-N-G-U-I-N. I also do a bunch of shows here at AfterBuzz. I also did, finally got released. Guys, be sure to check out on YouTube, Apparitions, a fictional podcast thing where I do the voice of the main character, Adeline. You can follow that at static_stations if you want to check that out. So, go do that. Thank you guys so much for watching. We will see you all next week. Bye.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
See you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.